It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back into Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, joined alongside Chris Carino. We got Zach Cordova on the sticks doing his thing. Chris, UFC 297 officially in the books, and it was a pretty fun night, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I know that we were saying before this, the main card wasn't the most stacked, but I felt like most of the fights delivered, at least for me. It was a fun night. But how are you doing first?
I'm fantastic. It's early on this Friday morning. Long week. I feel like this week's lasted forever. I feel like the event on Saturday was a month ago, but as soon as I finished watching it and in the mix of watching it, especially the main event, I was just thinking, can't wait to get on Pound for Pound and talk about this. So I'm just happy I'm here and happy we get to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely a long week, early morning. That doesn't matter though. I'm always down to talk some cage.
Always
with Chris
down to
Carino.
Tango, Carneri. Always down to tango.
Yeah, I feel like that's a line out of Roadhouse, which we will get into later.
You, Carneri. Go on.
Oh, yeah. But I think we should just jump straight into this UFC 297 card. More specifically, I want to talk about the co-main and main event because there were some, big happenings with those title fights. I want to talk about that co-main first, the women's bantamweight division. We have officially a new champion in Raquel Pennington. She beat Mayra Bueno Silva over 5 rounds. Unanimous decision, if I remember correctly. Honestly, I was pretty disappointed with this fight. I knew going into this fight that this was not going to be the most exciting blockbuster fight. If anything, Mayra Bueno Silva was either going to kind of make it exciting or it was going to be a little bit of a snooze fest. And it turned out to be kind of a snooze fest. So, yeah.
When the general consensus after a fight is to get rid of the division, I think that's an issue, Carneri.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I feel like that's always been the issue with the bantamweight women's division, like when Amanda Nunes isn't like a factor. For, the time she spent out of the sport during her loss to Juliana Pena, eventually she came back, kind of revitalized the division until she retired. And now we're kind of in this lull again, where we're kind of wondering who's going to be the next big thing, which we do kind of have maybe a bit of a prospect that we can get into later in Kayla Harrison that might be the next big thing at bantamweight. But
Right. Talking
purely for this title fight, I'm a big Raquel Pennington fan. I honestly love her kind of career story throughout the UFC, but it just wasn't that exciting of a fight, honestly. And like you said, I mean, to consider the existence of an entire division off of a title fight that should showcase a division, it's a little embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it now, Andrew, looking back, should the division have retired with Nunes? But when you think about the golden years of the division, it would headline pay-per-views. It was a large deal. It was a huge deal. And so I don't think that the potential for the division to be great isn't there. I just think right now at this very moment in time, there's just not enough star power. And honestly, I don't want to get political here, but I think it's a little sexist for everyone, there being one title fight that people don't really have a ton of interest in a division, and everyone's like, let's get rid of the division.
That
would never happen on the men's side. And it's not like this division has just been terrible over the last decade. Some of the biggest stars and longevity legends in the history of the sport come from the bantamweight division.
Yeah.
That's obviously not the answer to get rid of the division, but where it's at right now, it's definitely not a place where it can be this high on cards. A co-main event is just not the place that this needs to be. I think maybe even a headlining of a fight night, that could have been maybe a little exciting. I think it's genuinely the UFC just needing to put it in the right place, and eventually it'll grow. You just talked about it. A lot of young and up-and-comers that maybe will make the division exciting again, maybe bring back the glory days of the division, but right now where it sits, it's it's getting mistreated. And honestly, for all the excitement in the press conference and the sparring and the yelling at each other, I thought it'd be more exciting, but definitely not a great sign for the bantamweight division.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a little bit disappointing. One last question I want to pose to you, kind of just following this fight. Do you think the bantamweight women's division is now the most boring women's division in the UFC? Because, I mean, looking at these other women's divisions, we got strawweight champion Zhang Weili, we got Yan Xiaonan, Tatiana Suarez, Amanda Lemos. And then for flyweight, we got Alexa Grasso, her whole thing with Valentina Shevchenko. Yeah. We also got Manon Fureau in there. And then finally, we got bantamweight, which is kind of just, it seems like the odd one out. Number one ranked, or number one contender, you have Juliana Pena, who just wants to kind of jabber on Twitter instead of actually fighting. Mara Bueno Silva, Caitlin Vera. None of these names are really kind of jumping out at me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think the other two women's divisions are in any sort of limbo compared to this one. The other two divisions, I feel like, are exciting. They have fights that come up that have history behind them and have some sort of storyline going along as well. We were talking WWE before this. The Netflix deal is something that I got excited about this week, them selling Monday Night Raw to Netflix. But you can feel almost the theater to those other divisions. The bantamweight division, no theater right now. And it's just not in a great place. It's easily the least exciting division in the UFC right now. And it's not even unexciting or boring. Just in comparison to these other divisions, women's divisions and men's divisions, it doesn't look great in comparison.
Yeah, no, it definitely is, like, I would probably say one of the shallowest divisions in the UFC now.
The shallowest.
Disappointing stuff. But I will say, though, the UFC 297 main event, Dricus du Plessis versus Sean Strickland, actually kind of landed for me. I was pretty happy with how this fight went.
Yeah,
it was hotly contested. A lot of people have their opinions on who actually won the fight. Dricus du Plessis got the unanimous, or actually it was split decision victory. So he is the new middleweight champion. So I guess first I want to ask you, who do you think won the fight? Do you think it was Dricus or do you think it was Sean?
Well, Andrew, you know I thought it was Sean. I
know, I was kind of teeing you up.
Yeah, you were teeing me up, and I appreciate it. I see people like Chael Sonnen saying he won every round. I genuinely get
saying Dricus won every round.
Yeah. And I genuinely get confused as to, I genuinely think that sometimes I'm watching different fights than other people. Like, genuinely. And Dana even said this after his press conference. I know DDP got mad about it, and he obviously didn't hear what Dana said, because if he would have heard it, he wouldn't have got as upset. But Dana thought that Sean won the fight, but he also said at the same table, people sitting with him thought Dricus won. It's one of the more perplexing things about fighting, and one of the things that, like, there has to be a science behind it almost. But I just don't understand how you can give any of the first three rounds to Dricus. I think I remember specifically in my head the fourth round standing out and thinking, wow, Dricus just won that round. Like, DDP, that was his first round he got, and it stuck out to me, like, heavily when in the moment. And obviously the fifth round as well was Dricus's as well, but I just don't know how you give that fight to du Plessis. I don't understand it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's an interesting conversation, yeah. And the main point I want to bring forth is, one, sorry for that little intermission. We are back. Personally, Chris, I believe that Dricus won the fight, and I'll explain my point a little bit. Yeah, I'll explain my point a little bit later on, but we do have an update for this episode, and that is Zach officially in the booth now joining us. He is our new C host.
Very special guest.
Hopefully he will be a recurring guest on Pound for Pound. Zach, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. A little tired this morning, but you know how it goes. Friday, last day of classes before the weekend.
Yeah, no, it definitely is, you know, it's a bit tiring. Waking up early in the morning, but like I said earlier, always down to talk some cage, and I'm glad you're in the booth finally.
No, definitely. Always a good time talking some cage in the morning. I could talk cage at any time of the day, so let's go.
Oh, yeah. So I guess off the back of that, I want to ask you, who won this fight in your eyes? Was it Dricus? Was it Sean? What was the reason? Was it more damage, output, control? What did you think of this fight?
This is a hard fight for me. I think this is one that you kind of have to watch back, maybe not even just one time, but two times, just to kind of figure it out. I mean, when I first watched it and we got to a decision, my first thought was Sean Strickland's retaining this title. But obviously we got something different. We got a split decision to Dricus du Plessis. I mean, it's really hard to call because you have to figure out what the judges were basing this fight off of, basing their criteria. Were the takedowns from Dricus enough to win a round? Or did Strickland just jab him to death and was able to basically win each round through that? I mean, It's hard for me to give like an honest opinion and say Strickland won this fight because I honestly have to watch this one back, but I think it was close, and I don't think in any way it was a robbery towards either man.
No, I think robbery is one of the narratives that is wrong about this
yeah,
fight. I even saw John Anik. That broke my heart. Anybody see that? Him talking about how he might have to leave the sport just from the bottom feeder commenters are just like ruining his life.
And oh, yeah.
Everything's a robbery. Everything is wrong. He's just saying it's getting so toxic. He might have to go to another sport. I mean, it's just heartbreaking.
It really is heartbreaking, especially for a guy that's, you know, as good as John Anik.
And John is my
sport.
He's my favorite ever. I mean, all respect to the OG, of course. You know, him and Rogan had their thing going for a decade. Yeah. But John is just, he's incredible, so polished, especially for someone like me who's paying so much attention to play-by-play. He is just always on the money. I'll never forget his Leon call. That's not the cloth from which he is cut. And it would be so sad to see something like this and bottom feeders. And I mean bottom feeders of people ruining for us.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Absolute troglodytes.
Trash.
Honestly. Yeah,
absolute
like
trash.
Really ruining the sport, honestly. Yes. I will say, I don't know. I feel like we're getting a bit off topic. I do want to recenter this conversation back on Strickland versus Duplessis.
Absolutely.
And... yeah, I think
it wasn't a robbery.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the point that I want to make. The notion that this was a robbery is insane. I feel like everybody throws that term around when it's a close fight and it doesn't go like, you know, to the pick that they want. They're like, oh, it's a robbery. It's a robbery. There's no way that you could see it the other way. But looking at the scorecards, I mean, I don't know. Again, it's just based on the criteria that they judged the fight on. And if they judged it in terms of damage during the fight, I could definitely see them kind of edging more towards Duplessis. I mean, obviously after the fight and, you know, kind of their swelling kind of blew up a little bit. It looks like Drake has got the worst end of it. But during the fight, right after, it looked like Sean Strickland, I mean, he had two cuts from his eyes. I don't know. I mean, it could have swayed them. But yeah, it's just it's a weird decision where I feel like no one guy is really the winner.
Yeah, I think there's one thing I do want to bring up, though. When have we ever seen somebody make Driggs Dupressy's face look like this? I mean, if anyone had any doubts about Sean Strickland being one of the best fighters in the division, it's hard to go against that now. I mean, Sean Strickland has proven himself now in two straight fights against two of probably the best fighters in the division besides Whitaker.
Yeah.
And over and over, and now we're just learning more and more about him as a fighter, as a competitor, and I think it's hard to not have him in that kind of title talk now, even for a rematch, because this fight was so close. I mean, I can definitely see a rematch happening at some point.
I would say at some point. I think some people kind of jumped the gun and said, like, oh, he deserves an immediate rematch, and I think we should still reserve that for, you know, title holders that have a couple defenses on their belt, but... despite that, though, I can 100% see a rematch down the line because I think that, this was a big setback for Strickland. I think you really need to make the most of this opportunity to kind of build off that Adesanya win. But I think he's far from out of the conversation.
And I think What happens with Izzy changes all of this. Duplessis wins again, Sean rematch, like immediately. And if Izzy wins, Sean rematch again. I think Sean gets the fight either way. Mm-hmm. I would love an Izzy-Sean rematch. That would be magic. I almost would rather that than the DDP fight, to be completely honest with you. I thought that was such a weird fight, that first Sean and Izzy fight. I think if Izzy takes him fully seriously, like really does the Pineda build, and it's just like, I have to destroy this guy, it would be one of the greatest fights of all time. And I think there's honestly a little bit more bad blood over there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so as well. And off the back of that, I mean, you're kind of hinting at Drickus's next potential fight, which I think we're all kind of in unanimous agreement that it should be Israel Adesanya.
Absolutely.
100%, and they should schedule that for UFC 300 right away. I mean, we were literally just talking before this episode started. Zach mentioned they're running out of main events to kind of fit into that slot.
Yeah.
And as much as we love Leon Edwards, I don't know if we really want to see a title fight against Bilal Muhammad in that main event or kind of in that card.
Give me Leon Usman 4. We might be talking a little differently, but nonetheless.
I feel bad for Bilal. I've never been on like the big hate train against him, but at the same time, I do have a feeling that like Bilal should be one of the fighters to fight for a title on a prelims, just because he can put you to sleep sometimes. And yeah. This is no hate to Bilal. I mean, it sounds like hate to Bilal, but man, I don't want to see this headline UFC 300.
There's a guy in that division, just throwing it out there, that's undefeated. some would say unchallenged. Some would say no one even gets out of the cage with him without getting finished. That could be a UFC 300 fight with Leon, in my opinion, if he got that chance, which I don't know if they're ready to give it to him yet, but when they do, that would be incredible. I don't know. Bilal, I don't care. Do you guys care? Just on a side note?
Not really. I mean, I like Bilal. I love the story and everything like that, and I do think his style is something that you can turn into a, you know, kind of a more interesting finishing style. And even removing that from the equation, I still think he's an interesting fighter to look at stylistically. That being said, though, he's not going to bring in the crowds. He's not the most exciting fighter, and no. I'm realistic enough to the point where I will admit that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I
sorry
don't.
For the tangent. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know. We'll see where that fight ends up actually happening. I'm very interested. But recentering it, though.
300.
Yeah, UFC 300. Do you want to see Dricus du Plessis versus Adesanya?
100%. 100%. Yeah. I think that's a great fight. I think stylistically, it's just fireworks. I think the buildup to it, the little animosity between them, I think it draws in the crowd, and that to me, when I look at that fight, it screams UFC 300 at me. I don't think there's very many other events right now with how many of your top fighters you have booked that you can put in that main spot in 300.
I agree. The turnaround is going to be quick for DDP, obviously, but he's such a monster that I think he can do it. I want to hold my card still for the main event. I don't know if I want it to be the main event yet because I still am waiting for, like, holy crap, that's happening. Like, that's the main event. I'm excited to see what color the mat is because that'll be cool. If they did like a black mat, that would be sick because they can't do gold because they already did gold, but we'll see. I'm curious to see where they're going to do it as well. I would assume T-Mobile.
Yeah,
I would assume.
So.
They should honestly do a stadium. I don't know what's really holding them back from doing Raider. What's the Raider Stadium called? They're in their division.
Allegiant Stadium.
Yeah, like I wouldn't. That would be awesome. Yeah. That would be awesome. And, you know, they couldn't fill UFC 300. They could 100% fill UFC 300. Mm-hmm. But I do think. If we're talking co-main event, there's not many better co-main events you can get. 100%.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I mean, do we have anything in terms of very, very early picks if that fight does end up happening? Do you think that goes more towards Izzy, Dricus? Any reason why?
For me, I'm going to pick Izzy. I mean, maybe slight bias just because I'd say I'm a fan of Israel Adesanya. I've followed his career for as long as he's been in the UFC. And I just think stylistically, this is a matchup where Izzy can kind of pick apart the bigger guy, just like as he did to Paulo Costa, just kind of finding that shot eventually and dropping him, putting him away. But I don't know. We've seen Dricus du Plessis, and he's a beast. It's hard to pick against him.
Yeah, I watched the live stream, the Joe Rogan live stream, while I was watching these fights. I synced them up together with Joey Diaz and that idiot Brendan Schaub. That's a whole other discussion for another day. I hate that guy. I was really writing down dumb things he was saying during the live stream because it was that insane. But they were talking the whole fight about how Izzy really was probably kicking himself at home watching that fight, because in the comparison du Plessis, that's exactly the fighter that would have the most trouble with Izzy. Like, it's the almost, it's the perfect style for Izzy. So almost he was kicking himself, like, why isn't that me out there? It should have been him if he didn't undervalue Sean. So I think this next fight coming in, especially with the chip on his shoulder after losing, we know how he fights that way. It's going to be a tough night for du Plessis.
100%. I've always said that I think Adesanya kind of, in some respects, fights to the level of his opponents. And if there's not, you know, if the other fighter isn't really pushing the pace too much, it's not going to be that exciting of a fight. But a motivated Israel Adesanya cannot be underestimated. I mean, we've seen that in the Alex Pereira fight. We saw it in the Paulo Costa fight. When he's on, he is a very, very dangerous person. And I think that's going to be potentially what we see in this, again, potential Dricus fight. I really hope that they do confirm that. We'll see.
Me too.
But that does kind of wrap up UFC 297, a lot of implications moving out of that card.
Yep.
Very, very fun to watch. We got UFC 298 coming up next, which would be very, very fun. I can't wait to talk about that with you guys. But we do have some other kind of fun things in the MMA world that I do want to talk about with you guys. Zach, I'm sorry that this is like your first episode on and we're talking about, spoiler alert, we're talking about the new Roadhouse trailer that came out. Which, man, I mean, honestly, it looks pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Like, I still need to watch the original Roadhouse. My dad is a big fan of that film, Patrick Swayze and all that. But from what I've seen, I'm going to see it in theaters. I'm excited. And also, like, Conor McGregor does look kind of like the perfect villain to me.
No, definitely. I feel like when I watch the trailer, it's just kind of watching Conor McGregor play himself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think, first of all, I think it shows a lot about where the UFC is right now, that something like Roadhouse can come out and it immediately in the plot draws alternatives to the UFC. Like, in the heads of the writers, they're thinking, if a fighter guy was out here, what would he be doing fighting in the UFC? I think that's a huge deal for UFC. Also just shows the discrepancy right now in popularity between boxing and the UFC. And yeah, Conor, it reminds me of a lot of other guys as well, other fighters, other athletes that do these like movies in the middle of their kind of runs at the top. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to watch back. That's what I'm most excited about in 20 years watching this back. Like, that was a pretty wild era of Conor. And yeah, he's playing himself for the most part. It's just a very heightened version, just Conor if he lived in a fantasy land, which he does, but the rest of us don't. And it's interesting. I think it's only good for the UFC because we know the announcement's going to be soon, hopefully. You know, we don't know. We hear four different things from Dana, Michael, or Dana, Chandler, and him. But yeah, it's going to be really cool to see. I think the movie will be great. If he's good, I can see him getting more roles as well. You too can't see him popping up in a Fast and Furious movie. I definitely can.
Oh, 100%. I mean, back in the day, I remember, if I'm remembering correctly, he showed up in that one Call of Duty game too.
Yes, yeah. Infinite Warfare.
Yeah, yeah, that's
wow.
Right.
Wow, good call, Andrew. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, he was in that. This role should be interesting. It seems like fun as well. You were there, Andrew, when they filmed some of the Gyllenhaal scenes, in the cage and at the weigh-in and things like that. And I just think it's really cool. And yeah, there's not a better guy to share the screen with as a newcomer than Jake Gyllenhaal. And yeah, I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah, no, I can.
And also, his chest looks massive.
Oh, huge!
Like, what is he? Looks like an Oompa Loompa. Like, he's actually massive.
That's definitely before USADA swooped in.
No, 100%.
That was definitely like peak. Yeah. Oh, I'm in my recovery mode. All that good stuff. But yeah, I was looking out the casting for this, and I was like wondering, like, is Conor McGregor just going to be Conor McGregor in the film? Because, like, that honestly, like, I think that would sell. Like, oh, it's just a crazy Conor McGregor, especially considering his recent, like, news.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no chance he goes in with his real name. And it's just, like, kind of the main villain, criminal, whatever.
Yeah, I think for plot
purposes,
because we didn't see him at any UFC scenes in the trailer. And it seems like he's kind of just, like, this, like, mob boss kind of guy. And I think, he's not playing himself. But he is playing himself also in another respect.
I think he actually wears a necklace that says Knox on it. I think his name in the film is Knox. I don't think he's necessarily playing himself. I'm pretty sure they just said, Conor, go be Conor.
Yeah.
Fair.
I didn't think there was a script. I think it's all improvised, I would assume.
Yeah. That's just him getting on set, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you say that, Zach, before? I think you said that before the pod. Did you say that it was all improvised?
Oh, no, it wasn't me. I think it was one of you, I thought.
We're assuming that, but I think it's probably
Listen,
true.
He's an entertainer to the highest order. I mean, he's the reason why the UFC is what it is today.
Absolutely.
Just it makes me wonder, too, if there's people in the future who could kind of feed off of this in terms of UFC personalities and can potentially be this like movie star. I mean, you even see the signing with the WWE, the merging. Yeah. Who do you think could possibly switch over from the UFC into that role? I mean, if anyone else, it would be Conor McGregor.
Yeah, that was always Chael Sonnen was always the most missed opportunity. He would have been a star.
Generational WWE like wrestler.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard this story, but when he fought Silva the second time, Vince called him and told him, if you win this fight, I'll pay you $1 million to come on Monday Night Raw with the belt. Like, that was, you don't have to do anything else. You just have to stand top of the ramp and go like this with the belt and raise your hand, raise the belt. And he said, yeah, and then he didn't win. But he would have gone and done it. He didn't understand why he would have done that, why Vince would have cared about that, having his own belt. He thought it would have been good for the UFC, honestly, good promotion. But, yeah, missed opportunity. I could see Conor doing it. He had a little back and forth with Roman Reigns on Twitter a couple years ago. Roman's a lot bigger than he is. That'd be interesting.
That would be like Big Show versus Floyd Mayweather. Where Floyd actually like punched Big Show, and then Big Show was like, oh, I'm actually gonna like kick his ass.
Yeah, especially with The Rock probably in the main event of WrestleMania this year in Philadelphia, probably gonna be one of the biggest WrestleManias of all time. It's gonna be an interesting time. Mm-hmm. Even the Royal Rumble's coming up this weekend. What if number 30, the entrant, you start Notorious comes on? Could you imagine?
Yeah, like Sinead O'Connor starts playing.
Yeah.
Oh my
god. She teleports to the top of the ramp and she's just sitting standing there like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think those wrestlers in the ring would feel some like genuine fear. Yeah. Like, oh,
Yeah.
Dang.
That's the thing with Brock. When Brock Lesnar fought in the WWE, there's one instance where Braun Strowman, if either of you are familiar, built like a tree. He hit him by accident during a WWE game, fight, whatever. And you see Brock. He's hunched over. Brock legit punches him in the face, a real punch, and he almost falls over and gets knocked out. Because he was like, that's the scary power of not only Brock, but people like Connor. So I don't know if I would trust him in the ring, but as a personality, he can manage somebody. Imagine him being a manager of somebody.
A manager would be cool.
That would be killer.
That would be awesome.
Imagine he's like, he's Brock's manager. That would be maybe the coolest thing of all time. But yeah, I digress.
I feel like we got to get like Will Jing on this talk. He's like the resident WFUV WWE
person. I'm gonna be honest with you. I know as much as Will does. 100%. I'd be willing to get on here, do a little WWE trivia with Will. I know as much as Will does, and yeah.
Honestly, that sign me up for that. I'll create the questions. That actually sounds really fun.
We should do a week episode where we just build dream WWE UFC crossovers and we just talk about it. That would be awesome.
I'd like that. I like that. That'd be some fun stuff to do. You know, honestly, we might do that. How about that? But anyway, I guess just to close up this little Roadhouse talk, 100% we're going to go see this movie. Yes?
Yeah. Be a good time.
Definitely.
Cool. Great popcorn movie.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I might even buy tickets, get the whole Pound for Pound crew in the theaters.
Hey.
That could be fun.
That sounds like a plan. Yeah. I think we got to do a UFC together first before we all go see Roadhouse.
That's a good point. Fair point.
Yeah, me and Chris were originally going to do UFC 297 together. 4 degrees outside, though, on Saturday.
Yeah, couldn't do it. I think we could do the Sugar Sean fight.
I think
300 we should do like something.
300 definitely we're doing something.
Go to the city or something. I don't know if you guys, is there like MMA bars and things of that nature, like UFC bars? I don't know how that
works. I don't know if there's bars, but I know that like a couple movie theaters, what they'll do is they'll rent out a couple theaters and then have the fights on, and it'll just be like a bunch of people that are into MMA watching it.
I'm down personally.
Yeah, that could be it. Anyway, though, we're kind of getting into our own personal planning here. When we have plans formed, maybe we'll share with the Pound for Pound audience. But before we wrap up this episode, one last thing I do want to bring up is another UFC 300 fight announcement. I just want very quick takes on this. Holly Holm versus newcomer to the UFC, Kayla Harrison.
This is Zach's floor.
Super Bowl
As a New Mexico resident, we give you the floor.
Yeah, listen, Holly Holm is New Mexican Rocky. I've said it over and over again. She is the pride and joy of our state. As soon as you get into the Albuquerque airport, there's a big mural of her plastered on the wall. I'm always excited when I see a Holly Holm fight announcement. I know a lot of people reacted a little sour to it, but I don't think it's that bad. I think this is a little bit of a, I think this is definitely a matchup worthy of a UFC 300, maybe not a main card, but definitely is an early fight. I think it's kind of a good, especially a good introduction for, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her name.
Kayla Harrison.
I think this is a good introduction for her on a UFC 300 card. She's a very, very hype prospect. Holly Holm is somebody who, I mean, in recent times hasn't delivered as much, but could definitely put on a show for the fans. I'm kind of excited by this more than people, more than anyone else is, I feel like, but maybe that's just me and every other New Mexican watching along.
I don't know.
I have a random question. It has nothing to do with even fighting. Have you ever been to the High School Musical high school?
No, I actually just found out last year that was filmed in Albuquerque. I had no idea.
Yeah, I've known that since I'm like really young. Sorry. Go on, Andrew.
Oh my God. I don't even know where I was going to go with that. Oh, yeah. So basically what I was going to say was, I think this fight is very interesting. For a couple reasons. I think that, one, this brings up kind of old storylines of, obviously, earlier in Holly Holm's career when she knocked out Ronda Rousey, a very famous Olympian judoka. Now she has another right in front of her that's making her UFC debut in Kayla Harrison. Honestly, I think Kayla Harrison's judoka career was a bit more respected and renowned, and I think that's why people were initially so much more excited for Kayla to kind of get involved in MMA. But if Kayla could kind of overcome Holly Holm, I mean, that's a huge showing for, I guess, you know, judo in general, and also just kind of, I guess, right the wrongs of the past. Because as soon as Kayla Harrison has gone into or not even UFC, but into MMA, she's always drawn comparisons to Ronda Rousey. And I think this is, like, really the first chance that she has had in her career yet to really distance herself and kind of even put herself above Ronda Rousey, which is kind of crazy to say already, but
she might have a better highlight reel than Ronda does already. Some of her finishes are insane.
Yeah, but one thing I will say, though, that gets me very, very worried for that fight is Kayla Harrison, in her Olympian career, I believe, fought at 170 pounds. In the PFL, she fought at 155 to 145 pounds. Too. She's going to have to make, I believe, bantamweight, or, I mean, maybe possibly featherweight. We'll see possibly a 145. But either way, she's had problems with making 145. And I don't even know if she's ever attempted 135. But that could be a huge problem for Kayla Harrison going on in her UFC career.
She might need to just drop some walking around weight, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
I don't know if you've seen that picture that Dustin Poirier posted the other day. She looks huge compared to him. And he's
really?
And he's probably, like, what, 170 walking around?
Yeah, probably.
I mean, if not more, she's as tall as him, and she looks massive. I think it's going to be a real struggle for her to make. If they do, I'm actually looking right now to see what weight that's at. If it's at 35.
And could Holly get to 45?
Holly could definitely get to 45.
I think she's fought at 145 before.
She's tall. She's one of the taller fighters, I think, in that division. That's what I'm trying to find now to see what weight that's at, actually. But, I mean, that's a tough weight to make, especially when you're coming down from such a high weight. Especially she looks very tall. I'm not sure her actual height. She looks big, though, and that's a tough weight to make.
Yeah, 135 is really hard to make.
Yeah. No, it is. It is.
135?
What's up?
Is it 135?
Yeah, I'm not positive, but I'm actually checking right now, though. Holly Holm has fought at featherweight before.
She
fought for the belt, actually, lost to Chris Cyborg. I also believe, she fought against Jermaine Durand and me, and that was a really controversial fight. A lot of people felt like she won that, but whatever, that's kind of removed from this conversation. Yeah, I don't know how this fight's going to pan out if it is at 135. I mean, Kayla Harrison might not even make it into the octagon, so we'll just have to kind of wait and see. That'll be, interesting. But I guess if this fight does kind of happen, can I get a very quick pick maybe out of you guys? Very early pick?
For Zach's sake, give me Holly knockout. Come on now.
Yeah, I cannot go against Holly Holm ever. So, come on, give me a Holly knockout as well. I mean,
very, very true.
As good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, it would be kind of disrespectful if you go against Holly Holm. But I think I'm going to also go for Holly Holm. We'll see, though. I mean, very exciting for Stuffer Harrison to get this fight. But I think with that, that'll wrap up this installment of Pound for Pound. I just want to say thank you to all our listeners out there, as well as my great co-host Chris Carino and Zach Cordova, killing it on his first time. Kind of switched up producer and hosting, so nice job. Make sure you stick around for our episode next week where we talk about UFC Belice versus Kumabov. Thank you for listening, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.